Good evening. If it were Adele, which I use every day, I might understand it. But this one's beyond me. Only Doug can help me. Good evening. We're in chapter 36, 37, lesson 14. As we look at tonight's class, chapters 36 to 39 that we're beginning to study tonight through Sunday help us move away from the Assyrian period and the condemnation that Isaiah has pronounced upon the nations to the Babylonian period and beyond when God would deliver the remnant. A primary character in this class's study of Isaiah 36 and 37 is Hezekiah, who became king at age 25 and reigned 29 years. Now, Dale's going to talk a lot more about Hezekiah on Sunday, so he said, Larry, introduce Hezekiah tonight. So we're going to talk about Hezekiah for just a moment before we look fully at chapter 36. The main account of Hezekiah is in 2 Kings 18 through 20, Isaiah 36 to 39, and 2 Chronicles chapter 29 to 32. As king, Hezekiah had been busy restoring the true religion in Judah. He had been breaking down the idolatrous altars. He had been reinstituting the Passover. He paid tribute to Sennacherib and then decided that wasn't a good thing to do. And he had even fought the Philistine enemies. And let's see if we can get... In 2 Kings, the 18th chapter, the first six verses. Now it came about in the third year of Hosea, the son of Elah, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, became king. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. He did right in the sight of the Lord. That's a firm statement. According to all that his father David had done, he removed the high places and broke down the sacred pillars and cut down the Asherah. He also broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. For until those days, the sons of Israel burned incense to it. And it was called Nehushtan. Then look, in verse 5, he trusted in the Lord, the God of Israel, so that after him there was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor among those who were before him. For he clung to the Lord. He did not depart from following him, but kept his commandments, which the Lord had commanded Moses. That's a wonderful recommendation for a human being. A very honorable man. He made a couple of dumb mistakes that we mentioned Sunday by allowing some of the folks to go down and talk to the Egyptians and to pay tribute to Sennacherib. But this man has a recommendation that any of us could be pleased to receive. So in chapters 1 through 39, we're dealing with the great Assyrian effort to conquer the Jews. In chapters 40 to 66, 39 chapters up to where Dale will finish on Sunday, and then 27 chapters thereafter, 39 plus 27, 66 chapters. We have in 40 to 66 Isaiah's preparation of the people for captivity and ultimately their return and the coming of the Messiah. So tonight in chapters 36 and 37, we deal with the conflict between God, the only God, and the gods of Assyria and the nations, and God's victory is going to be devastating to the Assyrians. So let's see. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, chapter 36, verse 1, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and seized them. This would be about 701 B.C., which is generally thought to be the 14th year of Hezekiah's rule. Sennacherib succeeded his father as the ruler of Assyria in 705 and immediately began trying to settle some of the uprisings he had in his country out east. And once he did that, he moved westward. and tried to conquer a lot more territory. In 2 Kings 18, verse 13 to 1937, and 2 Chronicles 32, we read where Hezekiah tried to make peace with Sennacherib by paying a pretty major tribute, 300 talents of silver, 300 talents of gold, 30 talents of gold. And when in my notes I looked on May 28th, those things convert at today's market prices to about $50 million. So he tried to make some inroads with Sennacherib. But this didn't satisfy Sennacherib. So Sennacherib kept on conquering the villages near Jerusalem as he came toward Jerusalem and wanting to conquer it. In verse 2, and the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a large army, and he stood by the conduit of the upper pool on the highway of the Fuller's Field. Now, Rabshakeh is not the personal name of a man. It's thought to be a military title. And he reached the conduit of the upper pool on the highway of the Fuller Field, which is where Isaiah met Ahaz back in the 7th chapter, and tried to get Ahaz to listen to God. Now, God offered a sign to Ahaz, and Ahaz would not ask for one. God said in Isaiah, the 7th chapter, verse 20, that he would give him a sign, and it would be the king of Assyria. And we see here in the 36th chapter, it's true. What's the evidence of prophecy being true prophecy? It comes true. Then in verse 3, we see that Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the scribe, who we've met Shebna before in a different position, remember, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder, came out to him. So Hezekiah sends out some representatives to talk to this man. In verse 4 to 10, we have a speech by this military officer representing Sennacherib. And he's speaking to these three representatives of Hezekiah that Hezekiah sent to negotiate with him. Well, this Rabshakeh is a little bit like the history books talk about Ulysses S. Grant. You know, they corrupted the U.S. for Ulysses S. and made it unconditional surrender. And that's pretty much what Rabshakeh is going to be arguing for as we look at these verses. In verse 4, Rabshakeh said to them, "Now, say now to Hezekiah." Well, take note, he didn't even call him a king. He just threw out his name, a little bit rude there. But he says, "The great king, the king of Assyria." He gives honor to his king, but not to Hezekiah. And as he continues, he immediately says, "What is this confidence that you have?" You know, let's see if I've marked verse 4. What's this confidence you have? In other words, and what are you trusting? You see, in 2 Kings 18:7, we read that Hezekiah rebelled against Sennacherib after he gave him that tribute and said, I really don't want to be subservient to you. And he tried to make peace with Sennacherib. So in verse 5, Rabshakeh says, "Why do you think you've got confidence to say anything? Your counsel and strength for war are only empty words. Now on whom do you rely that you have rebelled against me?" Why does Hezekiah think he's strong enough to stand against the nation of Assyria that's rolling over everything in its path? So, in verses 6 and 7, Rabshakeh reminds Hezekiah that he only has two sources of help. That is, you can turn to Egypt, which we read about in chapter 30 or so, or you can turn to God. In verse 6, he says, Egypt is weak, and relying on Egypt will only make Hezekiah worse off. In verse 7, even Rabshakeh was smart enough to know that Judah trying to make an alliance with Egypt isn't going to work. So then he says, "What about the Jewish religion?" He doesn't understand it. Because look how he deals with it. But you say, and he's talking to the representatives of Hezekiah, they're going to deliver the message to Hezekiah, but you say, we trust in the Lord our God. And he basically compares him here to the idol worship in the high places, and you shall worship this person, this God. He says God's not going to help Judah because Hezekiah has destroyed the high places and the altars. Rabshakeh doesn't understand that by destroying those high places and altars, Hezekiah is uplifting the true God and supporting the true God. So Rabshakeh's not quite got everything figured out about the Jews. In verse 8, he says, maybe a little bit contemptuously, now therefore come make a bargain with my master, the king of Syria, and I'll give you 2,000 horses. If you can find somebody to ride them. Well, that kind of sets Hezekiah up and all the people as in the eyes of the Assyrians. You know, the Assyrians say, you Judeans are just really weak. Because I'm not going to give you the horses. You're not going to be able to meet the challenge. So then in verse 9, he says, so if you can't find riders for 2,000 horses, you'll need to defend yourself against how many officials? One official of the least of my master's servants, and rely on Egypt for any of your other aid from chariots and so on. I don't think Rabshakeh has much respect for Hezekiah and the Jews at this point. I think he's trying to demoralize anybody that's listening and trying to demoralize these representatives of Hezekiah. Judah can't beat the Assyrians, is what he's saying. Egypt can't beat the Assyrians. And then in verse 10, have I now come up without the Lord's approval against this land to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. He says Judah can't stand against Assyria because God will not help Judah, since God is the one who sent the Assyrian army to destroy Judah. I agree. Isaiah did write in Isaiah the 10th chapter, verses 5 to 6, woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I send it against a godless nation and commission it against the people of my fury to capture booty and to seize plunder and to trample them down like mud in the streets. In other words, God had sent the Assyrians. That much is true. And while it's true that God had brought the Assyrians against Jerusalem, now then, I think it's a little bit questionable in the way Rabshakeh words this, and I don't know that God spoke directly to Rabshakeh or Sennacherib, but I sincerely doubt it. But I think Rabshakeh's grandstanding here. He's skillfully trying to humiliate Judah. He's skillfully trying to tear down their confidence. Then Eliakim and Shebna and Joah said to Rabshakeh, apparently he's done a pretty good job, hadn't he? They say, speak now to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it, and do not speak with us in Judean in the hearing of the people who are on the wall. Well, as you look at verse 11, why would you convert to a different language if Rabshakeh wasn't having an effect in the words he was delivering? Now, Aramaic was probably, since Assyria was the big dog in the fight, it was probably the diplomatic language of the day, or the court language, if you will, of the Judean period or the Assyrian period. But that's not why they're wanting to switch to the other language. They don't want the people that are on the city walls listening to Rabshakeh speak to be demoralized any further by his comments. In verse 12, well, shouldn't have changed. In verse 12, Rabshakeh does, how far did I go? Well, let's just go backwards. I told Doug that I did this one time. Now he can see that I do it very easily. We'll get there. In verse 12, Rabshakeh doesn't accept the argument of the three officials. He refuses their request. He wants the people to hear him as he tries to scare them and cause panic. In verse 12, he paints a horrible picture by saying they'll make the siege so bad that the people will be doomed to eat and drink their own body waste. That's a pretty bad circumstance. Any comments to this point? Then look at verse 13. Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with loud voice, not in Aramaic like the officials had asked, but in Judean, and said, hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. So in verses 13 to 20, Rabshakeh gives another speech using the same language they ask him not to use. Speaking the Jewish language, he again calls his king great and fails to acknowledge Hezekiah as a king. In verses 14 and 15, he says that neither Hezekiah nor the Lord himself can deliver the Jewish people from the wrath and the army of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria. In verse 16, remember, he's speaking from verse 13 on. He says, do not listen to Hezekiah. There are people on the wall that are hearing him speak. Do not listen to Hezekiah. Rabshakeh is intentionally perverting the truth by portraying everything positively here, and it's wrong. He says in 16 and 17 that things would be great if they would submit to the Assyrians. You're going to be able to eat each of his own vine and each of his fig tree and drink the waters of your own cistern. He urges the people to think first of their stomachs. His promises that all will be well with them if they'll just surrender. The only sacrifice they'll have to be making is to be taken from their homeland before it's all over. He's not letting them know, in verse 17, until I come and take you away to the land like your own land. He's not letting them know that it's going to be a horrible march from Judea to Assyria or wherever they end up. In verse 18, it says, beware that Hezekiah does not mislead you, saying the Lord will deliver us. As you look at these verses, look at the rest of verse 18. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered his land from the hand of the king of Assyria? He just put the God of heaven that created the heavens and the earth, that made man on the same level as what? The pagan gods. He just treated him in his words like one of the gods of the nations. He put him in the same class as those worthless idols made with men. He says these pagan nations were defeated because their pagan gods were weak. While Rabshakeh seems to know a lot about the Jewish nation, he doesn't understand the true God. He doesn't understand that God is using him and Sennacherib and the Assyrians to accomplish his own purpose. And the day's coming when God's going to destroy the Assyrians. Isaiah said that in Isaiah 10, 5 and 6 and 25 and 27, that Assyria would be the rod of his anger, that eternal God and the only God would use, and then he would destroy them. In summary, in these first verses, Rabshakeh has tried to humiliate Judah with insults to the king, descriptions of how powerless they are, how they don't have anywhere that they can turn to Egypt or to the true God of heaven. He's insulted the true God, saying he's no better than the pagans, pagan gods. In verse 21, but they were silent and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was, do not answer him. As Hezekiah told the people on the wall not to respond to Rabshakeh, they were silent and answered him not a word. In verse 22, we see that the three official representatives, Eliakim and Joah and Shebna, then went to Hezekiah with great signs of mourning because their clothes are torn and they're in distress as they report what this Assyrian military official has said. Assyrian military commander comes, insults the king, insults the people, insults their God, tells them how weak they are. Where do you want to start when you destroy the, you want to destroy the confidence of a people? You destroy their confidence in their country. You destroy their confidence in their God. And when you destroy both of those, the people are going to be feeling like they can sit on a dime and dangle their legs over the edge, won't they? Now, Hezekiah is a good man. He had yielded to pressure a couple of times, as we mentioned earlier. But that was a mistake. As we go to 37, verse 1, when Hezekiah, King Hezekiah heard it, he tore his clothes, covered himself with his sack, with sackcloth, and entered the house of the Lord. That's how Hezekiah responded. Remember, we read at the first of class what a great person, great person of faith Hezekiah was. Any comments to this point? Pax. Absolutely. As we go into the 37th chapter, you tear your garments to display deep emotional sorrow and grief. Hezekiah did this, putting on sackcloth even, which wouldn't have made him feel very good. He enters into the house of the Lord to pray for deliverance. In 2 Chronicles 32, 7 and 8, he'd already told the people at one time, be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be dismayed because of the king of Assyria, nor because of all the horde that is with him. For the one with us is greater than the one with him. With him is only an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people relied on the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. That was an expression of faith to reassure the people. Now Hezekiah himself is being put to the test. And it's time to see if he means what he said to the people. In verse 2, we see that he sends Eliakim and Shebna and the elders of the priest Isaiah, a man of God. Then in verse 3, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of distress, rebuke, and rejection. And in verse 4, perhaps the Lord your God will hear the words of Rabshakeh. Well, We talked about him Hezekiah sending some folks down to Egypt, and that didn't work out. That was futile. He sent tribute to Sennacherib, and that didn't work out. $50 million down the drain. He knows he's wrong. Now he's sending representatives to Isaiah saying it's a day of distress, rebuke, and rejection. Likely, he knows he should have turned only to God to begin with. You'll recall in chapter 36, Rabshakeh said, "Our God is no better or different than one of the pagan gods." Now in verse 4, Hezekiah's message to Isaiah says, perhaps God will take note of what Rabshakeh has been saying. Hezekiah closes with a request there in verse 3. Let's see if I've got... Okay, in verse 3, that says, perhaps the Lord your God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom his master, the king of Assyria, sent to reproach the living God, and will rebuke the words which the Lord your God has heard. Therefore, offer a prayer for the remnant that is left. He wants God's help with sincerity. In verse 5, so the servants went to see Isaiah. Isaiah said to them, and Isaiah had been praying, I'm sure, thus you shall say to your master, thus says the Lord, do not be afraid. Now, if you got an Assyrian army outside the gates of Jerusalem, how are you going to feel? Isaiah says, the Lord tells you, do not be afraid because of the words that you've heard with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. True God of heaven heard, didn't he? Behold, I will put a spirit in him so that he will hear a rumor and return to his own land, and I will make him fall by the sword in his own land. Isaiah says, don't be scared. God's going to deal with Sennacherib, going to send him packing. He's going back to Assyria, and we're not told what the message was, but we are going to find that he did return to Assyria. He died 20 years later, as we're going to see at the hands of two of his sons. Then in verses 8 and following to about verse 13. In verse 8, Rabshakeh went to Sennacherib and found that he had moved his location. He had heard that possibly the king of Ethiopia was going to come to attack him. So he sent the messengers back to Hezekiah with trying to put some pressure on Hezekiah to surrender. And in verse 10 says, tell Hezekiah, do not let your God in whom you trust deceive you, saying Jerusalem will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. He doesn't want to fight the king of Ethiopia. He doesn't want to fight Hezekiah at the same time. He wants an easy surrender. So he's telling them, your God is weak. He's ineffective. And he says, do not let your God in whom you trust deceive you. Again, he's comparing the true God to what his experience has been with the worthless pagan gods. Then in verse 14, Hezekiah took the information that he had gotten from the hand of the messengers and went up to the house of the Lord and spread it out and prayed to the Lord. O Lord of hosts, in verse 17, O Lord, let's see. Verse 16, let's start there. O Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, who is enthroned above the cherubim, you are the God, you alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. He paid honor to the true God. Verse 17, he says, incline your ear and hear. Open your eyes, O Lord, and see. Listen to all the words of Sennacherib, who sent them to reproach the living God. He laid out the letter, not because God didn't know what was there, but likely to show that he realizes that only God can help him with this. And asked God to hear and see and listen to the blasphemous words that have come from Sennacherib. In verse 18, Hezekiah says to God that truly the Assyrian armies have conquered other countries and other lands, devastated all the countries in the lands, and have cast those pagan gods into the fire. Then in verse 20 is the request for deliverance by Hezekiah, not because the people of Judah need God's help, but they do. They do. But that's not the reason. But he says there, "Now, O Lord our God, deliver us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that Judah needs your help." That's not it. "That you alone, Lord our God." This prayer, Haley says, exalts God above all creation and heavenly beings, recognizes his eternal godhood, and reverently acknowledges the dependence of king and people upon God's salvation in this trying hour. Hezekiah, remember, was a king like none other before him and none after. In verse 21, Isaiah sends word to Hezekiah, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, because you have prayed to me about Sennacherib, king of Assyria, this is the word which the Lord has spoken against him. She has despised you and mocked you, the virgin daughter of Zion. She has shaken her head behind you, the daughter of Jerusalem." In other words, the virgin daughter of Zion is Jerusalem, has laughed at Sennacherib. In verse 23, God says the Assyrians have reproached and blasphemed not just God's city of Jerusalem, but God himself, the Holy One. "Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? And against whom have you raised your voice and haughtily lifted up your eyes?" Against the Holy One of Israel. Verse 24, "Through your servants you have reproached the Lord, and you have said, 'With my many chariots I came, I cut down, I'll go, I dug wells.'" In other words, Sennacherib has boasted a lot, and he's backed a lot of those boasts with fact. But he's taken all the credit. He's done everything, and just saying, "I did this." He's a very prideful person. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall, doesn't it? In verse 24, he's mowed over all those obstacles. And then in verse 25, Sennacherib even boasted that when wells were dry, his people dug further and drank waters wherever they chose. Nothing could stand in their way. So in verse 26, God challenges Sennacherib to answer God's question. God asks Sennacherib if he's heard that it is God who decided long ago to punish his people if they rejected his law. He would do so by bringing a nation from far away to chastise his people. We've read this, I think, before. Deuteronomy, the 38th chapter, verses 47 through 50. "Because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and a glad heart for the abundance of all things, therefore you shall serve your enemies, whom the Lord will send against you in hunger, in thirst, in nakedness, and in lack of all things. And he will put an iron yoke on your neck until he has destroyed you. The Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as the eagle swoops down, a nation whose language you shall not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, who will have no respect for the old, nor show favor to the young." God's going to use the Assyrians to accomplish his purpose. There's no doubt about it. That's what he said in the long ago, and God is faithful and does what he says. And he says he allowed the Assyrians to conquer the cities like vegetation in the field or grass on a housetop is withered by the hot sun. In verse 28, God tells Sennacherib, "But I know you're sitting down and you're going out." There's nothing about Sennacherib that God doesn't know. And he's telling Sennacherib that. And in verse 29, God says, "Because Sennacherib has expressed some very intense feelings about the true God of heaven and has acted and spoken with arrogance, he's going to be punished and forced to return. I will turn you back by the way which you came." Verse 30, "This shall be a sign for you." God provides a message to Isaiah to give Hezekiah. God says to tell Hezekiah, now we're turning back toward Hezekiah, "Tell Hezekiah the sign God gives is that despite the devastation the Assyrians have brought to the land. You will eat this year what grows of itself. In other words, just whatever came out of the ground naturally. And in the second year, what springs up from the same thing. But in the third year, you're going to sow, reap, and plant vineyards. In other words, things are going to get better for you right now. That's the message that God gives of assurance to his people that the Assyrian invasion is going to be over. In verses 31 and 32, those that survived that invasion, likely many of whom took refuge inside of Jerusalem, will go forth and take root and bear fruit again for a period of time. In verse 33, it says, "Therefore, says the Lord concerning the king of Assyria, he will not come to this city or shoot an arrow there, and he will not come before it with a shield or throw up a siege ramp." He assures Hezekiah that Sennacherib's not going to be able to use his army against him. Why? Because God says so. That's good enough. God is going to defend the city for his own sake, for the sake of his honor and his absolute godhood. He's going to defend. "For I will defend," verse 35, "the city to save it for my own sake." In verse 36, "Then the angel of the Lord went out and struck 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. And when men arose early in the morning, behold, all of these were dead. So Sennacherib, king of Assyria, departed and returned home and lived at Nineveh." And he lived there about 20 years. And then verse 38, "It came about as he was worshiping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that Adrammelech and Sharezer, his sons, killed him with the sword. And they escaped into the land of Ararat, and Esarhaddon, his son, became king in his place." What we see is God is in control. The people of Judah had come near disaster. They quit seeking help from Egypt and quit trying to buy off the Assyrians. They turned to God in prayer, and God responded. God said through the prophecies of Isaiah what he would do, and God did it. The people should have learned from these events. And they got better for a while, but they didn't learn enough. Any comments for 36 and 37? Freddie.
I'm reminded of what is said in Romans 8, 31. It goes something like this. What can we say? If God be for us, who can be against us?
Absolutely. Anyone else? Sherry. Well, I'll just leave it at this. Go back and look at who Hezekiah's son was. Consider how good Hezekiah was. And then look at his son who became king subsequently. And he's one of the worst, evil, horrible kings they ever had. Thank you. Dale will begin in chapter 39 on Sunday morning.